Welcome to the Your Gateway to Wealth and Fulfillment podcast. I'm Andrew Kittleson, advisor with Gateway Wealth Management at UBS Financial Services. We're located in Charlotte, North Carolina, and can be reached at 704-362-8260. Our guest today is Mike Whitehead from the Center for Intentional Leadership. Mike is not affiliated with UBS, and his views expressed here are his own. Mike, I've known you for a long time. Welcome to our podcast. Looking forward to the conversation. I'd love to start by just hearing a little bit about you, kind of your upbringing, what brought you to this focus on intentionality.
Well, Andrew, first of all, thank you very much. I had to ask you a little bit earlier, had you played basketball yesterday or today? What most people may not know is you and I have been playing basketball together for a very long time. I recently stopped playing basketball, but you're still going. And I could tell by the way you were walking that you may have had a tough game.
I did. Last time I played was yesterday, and it was a bit of a struggle for me, but at least we got the exercise in.
One of the things that I'm thankful to be here, because you're a good friend of mine, and you've always been a good friend of mine. I don't normally do these types of things, but when you called, you do things for people and with people that you care about and that you respect, and I respect you greatly, and I appreciate what you're doing. There are a lot of people who do what you do, but there are very few who are as distinguished as you are in terms of your care and commitment to people and what's important to them. So I think it's important that I, and that is not an advertisement or a paid marketing statement, that's my direct experience of you. And what I know about you is that you care about people and you care about their future and you care about their fulfillment. And that's consistent with what our firm's about too.
I appreciate that. And there's a lot of commonality between who we serve and how we try to differentiate ourselves and really providing impact to their lives. So I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, I moving into my 25th year, our company's 25th year in business in 2025. So it's a very exciting time for us. It's been 25 years of helping people make the kind of impact they want to make in their own life. And not only just make an impact, but have satisfaction. I think you use the term fulfillment from time to time. What's the point if you make a lot of money or you have a great professional success, but at the end of the day, you don't feel quite satisfied or quite fulfilled? That would be a terrible way to end a career. A lot of our work is about helping people discover what's that next chapter of their life? What does it look like? And how do they find meaning and satisfaction and fulfillment in that part of their life? Obviously, they've done extraordinarily well professionally. They've done extraordinarily well financially. Maybe they have made a name for themselves. But what we've discovered is, you know, at some point, making a name for yourself, once you've done that, the next question is, what's the significance going to be with my life going forward? What's next? So that's, for me, that requires, there's no accident that the name of our company is called the Center for Intentional Leadership. It requires a level of intentionality in life, in living, to create the kind of future that you and I really want for that next stage in our life. In my experience working with executives and CEOs, oftentimes when they get to that place where they're toward the end of their career, there's almost an existential crisis for some, which is, what am I going to do now? I've made it. I've accomplished it. And more importantly, who am I now? Not just what am I going to do, but who am I now that I'm not associated with this entity? Or I don't have the title anymore. And by the way, the phone's not ringing as much anymore either. And so what happens is that there's this moment of, I need to go through a little bit of a discovery, a rediscovery of what I'm about, kind of an assessment of our lives. And so what I've been doing, particularly the past few years, is working with people to go through that intentional inquiry. That's what I'll refer to it, an intentional inquiry into who they are now and what are they going to do now, given that they have reached this stage in their life. Does that make sense? Does that register?
Yeah. Registers with me makes a lot of sense. People are probably getting tired of hearing this statistic from me, but as it relates to business owners, you know, 75% of them are dissatisfied after the sale of their business. Mm. I've not seen any stats on executives. I would imagine it might be similar. And some of that might be the financial component, you know, not understanding kind of all the finances around a transaction and having run your lifestyle through the business. And now that you sold it, how much money do you need after taxes from a cash flow standpoint? And where is that coming from? I think a bigger question or issue is what you're talking about. What do I do now? What do I do next? Where do I get that fulfillment? And in my experience, the sooner you can have those conversations, kind of start talking about that, maybe years in advance of somebody moving on to the next chapter of their life, the bigger the impact that can be. But that doesn't often happen. A lot of times it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's sort of upon them. They haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it mm-hmm. and really spend some time, you know, digging and asking the right questions and
yeah.
you know, come up with a game plan for, you know, where you're going to get that overused word here from me, but that fulfillment.
There's a term we use in our firm that you and I have. We live somewhat on a continuum. And that continuum is from the left-hand side of what we'll refer to as a default mode of living. So by default, I wake up in the morning, I do what I do, I'm pretty used to it, you know, and I get into somewhat of a rut, but it's a pretty good rut. So it's not a bad rut. You know, there are some bad ruts, but, you know, people get in a pretty good routine and they like it. But at some point, particularly in the stage you're talking about, is that if I don't bring some intentionality to that default mode, I may wake up one day and I haven't thought about what I'm going to do when I sell my business. I haven't thought about what I'm going to do the next day I wake up. And so if it requires some intentionality before the business is sold or before the transaction or whatever the retirement is or whatever it is, that, yeah, they should spend some time talking about this so they're not shocked when they wake up the next day and the phone's not ringing and they haven't thought about these things. So it's a very proactive, intentional response, but most people are in default mode and they're so busy that they don't take time to do that.
Yeah, see that every day in our business. And again, with us having commonality and working with owners, founders, their teams, executives, you know, we really serve the same people. And when I was reviewing your website, one of the things you've got on there is that you create uncommon impact. And when we work with our clients, we'll focus with them on, you know, wanting to magnify the impact of what's most important to them. Mm. So I think, you know, asking those questions, you know, what is important to you? You know, where do your interests lie outside of the business or outside of your career can help shape those conversations and pave, you know, a path to what the next chapter looks like.
Yeah. I was literally just talking a few days ago to a gentleman in his late 60s. He's retired. He's been retired for a few years. He's made an enormous amount of money and is very satisfied and with what he has, lots of resources. And quite frankly, the conversation that we were having was around creativity, because he said he'd been in the linear side of his brain for so long, focused in a spreadsheet. And he's just now discovering that he has this hankering for creativity. Playing guitar, for example, which he's picked up, painting even, and also mentoring young people in the area of business. He's been a very successful entrepreneur. And the more we talked about that creativity, that other place in his life, the more excited he got, the more passionate he got about it. And he said, you know, I'm trying to get into a world. He said, I'm used to being in a world that I know. And I get calls to be on board seats and it's the same people and it's the same industry. But that's the world I know. But at this point in my life, I want to know about the world I don't know. And I want to explore the world I don't know. So for him, it's that creative side And for other people, it's going and starting a completely different type of philanthropic effort that they've never considered before, or traveling to places that they've never traveled before. So it's an exciting conversation. It doesn't have to be a, oh my God, conversation. It can be, oh my God, conversation, right? You know, it's the difference in how you say it, isn't it? Because it can be very exciting, this next part of your life. And what I do with people is help them uncover what they're naturally already good at anyway, but maybe they forgot. So their passions, their creativity, the things that are important to them.
How do you do that? How do you help them uncover? I'm imagining that those are asking the right type of questions.
It is a, quite frankly, it's a very deep set of meaningful questions. And these questions have to be asked in a context of trust. So my relationship with my clients have to be extraordinarily close and trustworthy, because we're asking people to have conversations that require them to be vulnerable and openly talk about some of their concerns and their fears and their doubts and also their hopes and their dreams. And you know, those are vulnerable conversations to have with people. But how we do sometimes what we do is we listen for the deeply held assumptions that people are carrying with them that they don't know they actually have with them. Sometimes I refer to it as, I'm operating from a false premise. So I'll use the word premise. Some people are operating from a false premise. They have a lot of promise. Their future has a lot of promise. And I'll distinguish between promise and premise. So if your life at age 50 or above is full of promise, but you're operating from a false premise, you won't actually get fulfillment. So an example of a false premise that someone might have is, you know, if I can just maybe invest my money a little bit more after I retire, and then maybe I'll increase that number just a little bit more, and then I'll fulfill on the promise of my life. Well, that's a false premise, because we all know that at some point, it really doesn't matter how many zeros you have at the end. As long as you have, and there's a, I don't know what the research says, but somewhere along the way, there's a certain amount of money that does not increase your happiness factor. And most of the clients we talk to, they're way beyond that.
Right.
So an assumption that people may have is that I have to get everything right before I do it. I have to get all my ducks in a row, and I have to get everything perfect before I begin something. Could be a false premise, which would keep people from taking action. How many people do we know that retire and then within a few years, they either get sick, or in some cases, they die early, because they're waiting around to begin the thing that they really want to do? I would suggest that they're operating from false premises that keep them from going and doing the great things that they want to do.
So you're talking about bringing that balance into their life before they get to the next stage.
Yes.
So starting that early.
Yeah, you don't really want to deal with an existential crisis, really, if you don't have to.
Right.
I know you all, I think, offer some workshops from time to get people thinking about that ahead of time. It's hard to get people to slow down and come take stock for a while. But once they do, they're so glad they did.
When you talk about slowing down, because this world is increasingly picking up speed, we've got so many inputs coming into our daily lives. What's the best way for someone to, I don't know if unplug is the right term, but slow down to think about some of the things you're talking about? Mm-hmm. And maybe through your work at the Center for Intentional Leadership, how do you get people to slow down and focus on some of these other areas that are going to benefit them?
Mm-hmm. It's probably one of the most important components of our work, what you just said. Sometimes people refer to it as, can you just be still? And can you just be present? Even as folks are listening to this podcast, for example, some people are listening to it in their car, some people are getting dressed, some people are moving through, and they literally may only get 50% of it, because the mind that we have is completely racing all the time. And we live in a world of quick sound bites and moving quickly. So if I begin right now to start to talk slowly and calm down and just notice that you and I are together here at this table and it's a beautiful afternoon and it's just clear and there are flowers here, plants on the table. Sometimes the most important way to get people to be present is to just notice what's right in front of them. So we start with, hey, what's right in front of you? Like how many times, you know, I've been married a long time. How many times have I missed really being present with my wife in the morning before I leave? Sometimes I can just be in a transactional mode, in a hurry to get out the door, and I'm missing the connection. And sometimes it only takes just a few seconds to pause and look in her eyes and say, I hope you have a really wonderful day. I love you. And really mean it. Not a transactional, I love you. So we begin with getting executives to probably take stock in maybe what are the unintentional consequences of being in such a hurry? What are they missing? I mean, I missed a lot of my kids' lives when they were younger because I was so busy and so distracted in my head. I was constantly thinking about my to-do list. I was constantly thinking about business. I remember reading books to my kids when they were younger, trying to read the books fast so I could get through the books and get them to bed. I actually don't like that I did that. I mean, thank God I caught that pretty early and corrected it. But I was missing the beautiful, wonderful moments of reading books and taking my time and getting into the story with them, you know, and acting it out and being dramatic. And once I made that shift, and it was partly because, you know, my wife and I discussed it that, you know, Mike, you probably need to slow down. You're not really present very often, really. And it's great. You're accomplishing a lot. You're doing well for the family. Everybody's doing well. But I think you're missing out on the quality of it by focusing on the quantity of it. And that was a really wonderful yet uncomfortable realization for me. But it did hit me upside the head with a 2x4 and say, you know, am I missing something here? And so the idea that I began to confront the consequences of my life, is this what I want my kids to remember? Or maybe they don't even remember that dad was really present when he was around? I didn't want that. You know, so I had an intention to be a really great father and a great husband. That was what I wanted to do. So every time I got messages that said, well, you're not quite there. Although that was uncomfortable, kind of like feedback when we're giving feedback in corporations, it's also incredibly enlightening. In sports, I call it watching the game film. I like kind of watching the game film to see what maybe I missed. If I don't watch the game film, I think I'm doing pretty well.
Right. So how do you incorporate that into your daily work if you're working with someone who's a Mike Whitehead from 15 or 20 years ago and is in that transactional mode and just has so much to do that they're disconnected from their more personal relationships? Because we all only have so much time to allocate to the things that are important to us. And it's very difficult to have that optimal balance. So someone whose relationships, let's say, are suffering, what are some, I don't know if simple is the right word, but initial techniques or strategies that one could incorporate to kind of bring focus back to kind of reallocate some of that time to the relationships that are most important to them?
What I'm going to say is going to be not what you think I'm going to say here, okay?
It wouldn't be the first time.
Okay. The premise that techniques and strategies and skills might be effective here, I'd say they're only going to be slightly effective. So what would be effective? What is really effective is the transformation of one's perspective, one's deep perspective. So when I'm working with someone, very little time do I spend working on techniques and strategies. Very little time. What I'm working with people on is how they see themselves, how they see the world they live in, what is their approach, what are their deeply held assumptions that they're bringing to life. If I don't do that successfully, no matter what techniques or skills or knowledge or books that I recommend, it won't make any difference. So we would call that a fundamental transformation of a mindset. And if I don't work with people on fundamentally altering and transforming the mindset they bring to what they're doing, no strategy or technique is going to work that long. So it requires people willing to engage in that kind of deep inquiry, especially in this day and time, Andrew, because it's like we're living in, I'm old enough to remember the movie, The Matrix.
One of my favorites.
Is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Well, for the young people who are listening who may not know about that movie, it is like living in a different reality. And I have watched young people today, including myself, being drawn into that matrix reality through the screen, the phones, the technology, social media, and begin to think that's actually real. Young people are having the hardest time in America today from a teen depression perspective because they're living sometimes in that reality and not face to face with other human beings. But executives are no different. We get sucked into the virtual reality or the business reality of our heads and our analysis, and forget that there's a whole nother world out here, in the real world, out here. So part of the process is to get people to see that they're living inside the matrix. In other words, we are living inside our heads, which I call the matrix of your head. So if you can get people to live outside their head, then they notice things in front of them and they're more satisfied, they're more fulfilled. And, you know, it's like looking up. I had a time I was on an airplane, I was in first class sitting there, and my first default tendency was to get my phone and just get into my emails. And I sat down and I was one of the first persons in the seat. I just caught myself like in that mode, which sometimes is the best thing you can do, is just catch yourself in the mode, in the default mode. And I just decided, I'm just putting my phone down. I'm just going to sit here. And that was it. I'm just going to sit here. And all of a sudden, this 89-year-old man, roughly late 80s, he's just got his cane and he's walking along right towards me in first class. He's in the seat in front of me, it looks like. And his wife is with him. They're just this incredible, wonderful couple. But they were really struggling. And this man had a bag he was trying to put up above the seat. And I immediately got up and grabbed his bag for him as he was trying to put it up and helped him put it up. And then I grabbed his wife's bag and I put it up. And he looked at me and he said, "Well, Sonny," which nobody's called me Sonny in a long time. I wasn't that much younger. And he said, "Thank you so much there, Sonny. I appreciate that." Looked me dead in the eye, you know. And his wife was looking at me and I looked at them. And it was just this simple little moment, you know, of making a connection with human beings. And you know, Andrew, if I was looking down at my phone in the matrix of my phone or in my head, I would not have noticed that. And it made my day and that I noticed it. And then when we landed, you know, I couldn't wait to get up and take care of their bags.
I mean, you get when you give, right?
So yeah.
That's what they say.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think it's, you know, so much about being present seems to be noticing when you're not.
How much of that can be facilitated by physically removing yourself from your day-to-day, from your home to your office, whatever your normal routine is? I imagine in your work, it's easier to get people to break from that thought process if you remove them from where they normally operate and bring them to a different location. I mean, how much of that
That's a great
point. Positive impact.
Andrew, that's a great point. So instead of talking about a process, a new process or a new technique, the structure, super important, right? Structure, super important. Let's say I'm trying to reduce my drinking, for example. You know, I'm just trying to cut back a little bit, or, you know, I want to exercise more. You know, the basic things that, you know, I want to eat better. Well, you know, when your friend calls and says, "Hey, you want to meet me for a drink at Bobby Flay's, or you want to come out to the bar and have a drink with me before?" And it sounds great, really sounds great. You say to your friend, "Do you think we could meet, you know, I've been wanting to go for a little walk here. Can you meet at the park here right down the street from your house? I'd love to just, can we just walk and talk for a second? Would that be okay?" you actually don't have to say anything about the bar or drinking or anything. You can just say, would that be okay? And of course, most people would say, well, sure, I hadn't thought about that. And then you end up walking around a park. You're not drinking. Why? Because you've put yourself in a different structure. I know myself, I love going to a bar and having a drink. So I know that if I'm trying to cut back and you ask me to go to a bar and I say yes, I'm not drinking water. Okay. Right. I mean, I would. It's not like that, but it sure is easier if I'm walking around a park and there's no alcohol there.
Absolutely.
So structure matters. I say structure matters. Putting yourself in different places. I think getting out of your house to go work out, for example, going to a gym, structure matters.
All right, great. I want to pivot a little bit here because we're talking about really working with individuals and, you know, helping them transition to a healthier lifestyle, you know, post-retirement, beforehand, whatever the case may be. But if we bring it back to working with businesses, executives, their teams, we do a lot of work in the business owner space, and a business is more desirable and easier to transition if you have the right team in place, right? So if the business owner is the head of sales or the lone salesperson, that's not very transferable, right? The business owner steps away, they lose that sales skill. He's really got to have the right team in place. I know you do a lot of work with individuals and executive coaching. Can you talk a little bit about building high performance teams? I know that's something that your group does as well. How do you do that?
Well, it is consistent with what we've been discussing a little bit, in that we'll start with you and I, for example. We have a friendship that goes back a long way. So we have a relationship, and our relationship is based on some common interests that we started with. We had common interest of basketball at the time when we were a lot younger. And then you had kids and I had kids and we had common interest in kids. And so kind of it begins with common interest, right? What are our common interests? And let's find that with each other. And then on teams, we begin to go beyond just common interest. We go to, what are our common goals and what do we have in common in terms of what we're committed to achieving together? Then we get into, well, what strengths do you bring to the table here? And what strengths do I bring to the table? And what biases do I bring to the table? You know, what are some things that get in the way of me being a great team player? So we take teams offsite and we help them get to know each other really well. We start with common interest, where they grew up, what their family was like. Some of them have never taken the time to even understand, what was it like for you growing up? You know, what was your experience with your family? And then we ask them, well, what do you enjoy doing when you're not working? And they start sharing that. And all of a sudden, somebody finds out, oh, I didn't know you liked fly fishing. I like fly fishing. And then what do you care deeply about? And then you have conversations what people care deeply about, and you get into conversations around their parents and their children and their relationships. And you find out that a lot of people are taking care of older family members. And you find out that people are committed to certain philanthropies. And all of a sudden, you've got a foundation built. Now we can talk about the business side. Now we can talk about what we want to accomplish as a team. What's the championship going to look like for us? How much money are we going to target this year to achieve this year? What difference are we going to make with our clients this year? So we don't talk strategy and execution first. We talk relationships of trust and connection first. Then once we get aligned there, then we talk strategy and execution. My experience is that most type A executives go the wrong way. They start with execution and strategy, and they forget to invest in the bottom of the relationship, the trust, and the alignment. Doing that well, if it was a pyramid, doing the bottom of the pyramid of relationships and trust and alignment first makes strategy easier, makes execution easier. Therefore, you're accomplishing more in a shorter period of time. That's how we do it.
I love it. Thanks for sharing that. As it relates to your executive coaching, you know, how long of an engagement are you typically involved in? Mm-hmm. If somebody comes to you and says, I need help with these areas, I want to get better at what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it varies and it's all over the map. And you probably have people you work with for years and years. And it probably depends on that individual's, right? We all get out what we put in. And so how much are they willing to put in? And that's probably going to vary. So maybe this is a difficult question to answer, but how long does it take typically to get an executive, a business owner, to kind of unplug, look at things from a different perspective, mm-hmm. and really have some significant change in their life? Mm-hmm.
We've done a lot of research on this question, Andrew, and our experience of it is that it's correlated to how much the individual has at stake in the process. So I'll explain a little bit about what I mean. But if we might start working with someone for roughly 6 months at a time, and usually it'll be a year, but typically we'll start 6 months at a time. If the person comes to us and they are committed, in the South we call it committed like the pig in a barbecue. Let that sink in for a second. Yeah, so if you're the pig in the barbecue, you're all in, right? Yeah. But if someone comes to us and they're committed like that, meaning they have a lot at stake, like they've hit a wall in a way, like I don't really know. I'm willing to run through the tires. I'm willing to do the exercises. I'm willing to ask myself these tough questions. Get me started. You know, it's kind of the old expression, put me in there. Let me do it. I'll do whatever it takes. Man, we can accomplish a lot in a short period of time with a person like that. Not everybody comes like that. Some people come curious and a little skeptical, and it may take a little longer because it takes a few months to get them comfortable with the relationship and the chemistry and the kind of questions that we're going to get into, you know, and a lot of people aren't used to those type of questions. They're not used to slowing down and having meaningful dialogue with someone. So that may take a little longer for that person. So I think it's correlated to the readiness factor. Are they ready for something like this?
How does somebody know if they're ready for this? How do they know if they're ready to take on this experience of trying
to... My experience is there's two paths. Some people come in because they're just curious, man. We have clients that just like, they love to learn. They've always loved to learn. They love to learn about themselves. They, you know, if they're playing golf, they just want to learn everything they can about golf. You know, they're just curious people. And so they're constantly trying to get better at everything they do. I love people like that. You know, I'm like that. I just want to learn stuff. I want to get better at it. And I want to do that for the rest of my life. So I don't necessarily approach things like when I'm going through coaching, and I use coaches for myself. When I'm going through that experience, I approach it with, how do I get better at what I do? How do I get better at my craft? I love that. I don't want to settle. And then there's this other path. And it's not as many people that come to us from this path, but the other path is something doesn't feel right to me in myself. You know, I'm really not, I should be happy. I should be satisfied. I should be fulfilled. I don't know why I'm not. I have everything. I mean, everything that society has ever told me, I have it. Children are great. Spouse or significant other's great. I'm not in bad shape, pretty healthy. Why is it that I don't have that sense of fulfillment and satisfaction? Now, some people, that's a real crisis. And now, that's somebody who has something at stake because they want to figure that out because they know they only have a certain number of years left and they don't want to go through the rest of their life that way. So that's another path. So I think there's the path of possibility and getting better because just because I want to do this just because and I've got financial resources to do it. And the other is, hey, look, I don't think I have a psychiatric problem here. I don't really have a mental problem. I kind of have a human being problem here. I got to sort this out. And that's okay. We don't do psychiatry. We don't do psychology. We don't fix people. We're not in the counseling program. That's not what we do. Coaching is very distinct from counseling. So if someone needs counseling, they should go to counseling.
All right. Well said. We've talked about building fulfillment in your life, you know, creating uncommon impact. It's been a great conversation. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate all the hard work you've put in your life. We haven't really talked much about how mm-hmm. you came up or were brought up, Happy to spend a few minutes talking about that if you would, or if there's anything else you want to talk about related to having an impact on people's lives. We're both out here trying to create better outcomes for business owners, executives, and the people that are close to them.
First of all, I've really enjoyed our conversation because although it's called a podcast, I really don't think it's a podcast. I think it's just a conversation between two friends who also care deeply about other people. And I really like that. That's why I don't really do these very often. So I will say that my entire life, it began when I lost my parents when I was really young. I lost my mother when I was 6. And then my father died shortly after that. That experience, the long story short, is I grew up in the care of the Department of Social Services. And my first place that I moved to was an orphanage when I was 6 years old. And in that orphanage, obviously it was a very disorienting time for me because I had no idea where I was. I'd never been anywhere else other than the apartment that I lived in. And my parents, you know, they were they were poor and we didn't have a whole lot growing up. So when I went and moved into the orphanage, I experienced a real disconnect from care and love and attention, even though I think my parents had a really tough time with that. It was still my family. That set about me moving. I don't know if you know much about foster care, but mostly foster care is a temporary situation. I ended up moving quite a bit from orphanages to foster homes, back to orphanages, back to foster homes and group homes and things like that. So it was a numerous amount of homes I lived in until I was about 15. So from the age of 6 to 15, I was in lots of different families. And I will tell you that at the time in my life, I wasn't sitting around thinking, you know, one day this is going to be good for me because this is really going to help me become resilient and it's going to help me understand what purpose in life means and it's going to help me help other people because I've been through a lot of things. It's going to help me understand the human condition and what the meanings of life can be and how you can be happy. And no, I wasn't thinking those things at the time. But I was very curious as a teenager and as a young person about life itself. And I think growing up that way, it forced me to be very entrepreneurial. It forced me to think deeply about life and what I wanted out of life. And had I had the word at the time, of course, I didn't have this word, but had I had the word intentionality at that time, I probably would have said, how can I be more intentional to make a better life for myself than this? And as I got older and I, you know, watched television and watched friends and go to high school with people who had a different life than I had, I began to see that, yeah, life could be different than the life that I had. And I got really excited about that. You know, I kind of got excited about how do I remove some of the false premises that are in my head that maybe I've been operating from, like a false premise that maybe I wasn't as good as everyone else. It's a false premise, right? That maybe I'm less than other people, false premise. That maybe I'm not as smart as other people, false premise. And I began to see these false premises and realize that if I could see them as illusions, that I really wasn't that different than anybody else. I just had a different set of life experiences. I'm not a different human being. It began to fall away from me, and I began to see that I could actually cause a different life than the one I was headed into by default, if you will. So later in life, I kind of coined this simple explanation of either I'm at cause in my life, I'm going to cause something to happen, or I'm at the effect of circumstances in my life. And I did not want to be at the effect of circumstances in my life. I didn't want to be at the effect of anything. So intentionality for me became this, hey, you can cause something to be different. It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter what happened to you. And that was super freeing to me. And so when I created the company, it was based a lot on my entire life growing up. And so intentionality was where I started in my own life.
Thanks for sharing. That's amazing to think about your early years and how I can't imagine that there was a lot of trust in your relationships early on. And you've used that word a lot in our conversation today to kind of come full circle and you're at a point in your life where you have so many trusted relationships. What a journey.
Well, you know, we'll close with your word, because I'm so happy that I can say that this current state, that I'm extraordinarily fulfilled. And that's been an intentional journey to be there. I hope that continues for the next 37 years.
So hopefully you'll have even a few more.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Mike Whitehead, thank you very much. And I know, you know, your business is built by word of mouth and all the great work you do and referrals you get from your clients. But if someone wanted to find you, where would they go about doing that?
That's a great question. Well, it's pretty simple. It's just intentionalleadership.com is the name of the company. They have about 15 of us, and it's a whole team of people who care deeply about other people and helping people get better. So they can reach out to us there.
All right. Mike Whitehead, thank you very much.
Thanks, Andrew.
Have a great day.
All right, thank you.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.